Good morning and welcome to Jew in the City Speaks with your host, Allison Josephs, also known as Jew in the City. It's been a really rough time for Jews since October 7th. It was already a climate before October 7th where we were noticing an increase in outward and obvious Jew hatred. But since October 7th, really everything has been about October 7th for most Jews in the world today. And we're starting to see institutions that were places of Jewish inclusion, at least for some time, I think more outwardly turn on the Jewish community. Obviously, nothing happens overnight. A lot of things like the climate at Ivy League universities has been changing over time, but I think the feeling of how bad things are has never been more acute since October 7th. Now, our guest today is a grad student at Harvard, Shabbos Kestenbaum, who is suing Harvard for their treatment of Jews and their sort of systemic anti-Semitism. But Shabbos and I met a few years ago, actually, at the NBC protest that we staged after the highly anti-Semitic episode of Nurses. We had a small group that we convened. It was the middle of COVID, so we kept it small. And we came to 30 Rock to let them know how we felt about Orthodox characters being portrayed without any Orthodox Jew in the room. Now, the exciting update from that demonstration is that in less than a year from that demonstration, we actually got to NBC and every other studio through our Hollywood bureau. And so maybe this is an omen or a good sign that, you know, when we start to fight back, we'll have good results. So Shabbos, thank you so much for joining us today. And on one hand, it's sad to have to see you under the circumstances that we're still needing to fight. But on the other hand, hopeful that maybe we can have success in the fights that we're doing.
Amen. Yeah, thank you so much for having me and the incredible work that you've been doing, not just in this regard of anti-Semitism on college campus, but everything that Jew in the City has been doing. And I would just add that by you giving me and other Jewish students a platform, you're already doing significantly more than most of these universities have been, which is just listening to Jewish students. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. And I mean, it's interesting because all the lessons that we have learned in recent years about inclusion and listening to the pain of marginalized groups and, you know, take them in their own words, all those rules stop applying when we get to Jews. So I guess if you could just walk us back to before you got to Harvard, where did you grow up? How did you grow up? What were you doing before you became a Harvard grad student?
Sure. So I'm an Orthodox Jew from Riverdale, New York. I'm one of seven. My parents are actually not from the United States. They're immigrants to this country. I'm a first-generation American.
From where?
They're from London. Mm-hmm. I was raised with a profound sense of appreciation and gratitude to this country for giving my parents and my family essentially a fresh start. So I was raised with Jewish values and I was raised with American values, and I never saw those two as contradictions. On the contrary, they very much complemented each other. And I was always encouraged to be a proud Jew, be a proud American. I wear my kippah and have been my whole life. That's not going to change. And before I decided to apply to Harvard, I was working sort of in both Jewish formal and informal spaces as it pertains to education. So I was working in Jewish high schools and at the same time doing informal Jewish work with organizations like Olami, like NCSY. And again, just being really passionate about my identity, being passionate about providing values to people from less affiliated or less connected backgrounds. And I decided, sort of as I was doing this, that I wanted to explore religion from an academic perspective. I had gone to yeshiva my whole life. I lived in Israel for 2 years, and I wanted to explore it from an academic, non-Jewish, secular environment. I also wanted to add the Jewish perspective. I wanted to add my unique voice to the conversation, especially at an institution like Harvard, which prides itself, as you said, on diversity and inclusion and multitudes of perspectives. And I was really disappointed, to put it mildly. This is before October 7th, but very disappointed on how Jews factor into that conversation or don't factor into that conversation.
So when did you start school at Harvard? When did your grad school program begin?
So it began about 2 years ago. And as I said, I came in with a sense of optimism, with a sense of being part of the conversation. And this is, of course, well before October 7th. The first week, literally the first week I was at Harvard, the student body invited a notorious anti-Semite who frequently appears on the Anti-Defamation League, top 10 anti-Semites, Mohammed El-Kurd, someone who says that Jews eat the organs of Palestinians, that the Israeli occupying forces have internalized the ways of Nazi Germany. And this is someone who the student body invited to speak. That was actually his second time coming to campus. Your viewers might know him as the one who just last week lamented the fact that you can't hijack planes anymore. And what I found really remarkable is Harvard has a strong track record of disciplining speech that they don't like. You know, they go out of their way to protect the feelings of minorities, to make sure that everyone feels included. And we can talk about whether that's productive, whether that's counterproductive, but regardless, that's how Harvard has operated and has always operated. The only single exception, of course, was Jews. You know, we brought this to the attention of the administration, of the president, that this is someone who actively spews anti-Semitism, belittles and threatens the safety of Jewish people. And we were met with shrugs. So the obvious double standards were very quickly apparent and very readily felt.
And what was the difference between how bad it was before October 7th and after October 7th?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we'll get into this later about the lawsuit, but the lawsuit, I would say, does a pretty good job at painting this picture of pervasive anti-Semitism both before and after. There certainly was anti-Semitism before October 7th, but it quite literally exploded, not even post-October 7th, but on the night of October 7th itself. So I'm an Orthodox Jew, meaning on the Jewish holidays like Simchat Torah, I'm not using my phone, I'm not using any electronics. We were all gathered at the Hillel, at the Chabad to celebrate the Jewish holiday. And slowly students began leaving, some were crying, and rumors began swirling that there was a terror attack. And unfortunately, as you and I both know, that's sort of par for the course. That's nothing, unfortunately, unusual. But as the night went on, it became quickly clear that no, this is something else entirely. And even though I don't use my phone, I was actually encouraged to locate my loved ones. I have three siblings who live in Israel, my grandparents, my aunts, my uncles. And while I was locating or trying to locate my siblings, and thank God everyone was safe, is safe, as that was happening, 34 student groups representing hundreds of Harvard students jumped out of their beds, some in their pajamas, to blame Jews for the largest massacre of Jews since the Holocaust as it was happening. As it was happening. So we didn't even have time to mourn, to comprehend what was occurring. We just had to become activists and defenders for our right to be at Harvard within the first couple of hours. And that letter sort of sparked what just became, to put it mildly, a series of unfortunate events. You know, Harvard didn't condemn these students. It took them a while to even condemn Hamas. We had student protesters yell and continue to yell, globalize the Intifada. They illegally disrupt classrooms. They take over university buildings. They post objectively anti-Semitic cartoons. And this isn't just the students, this is the faculty. So the fact that it's happening at Harvard, which purports to train the next generation of American leaders, of policymakers, of thought leaders, is so concerning. You know, if this is the future of America, then we are in deep, deep trouble. The fact that this type of behavior and attitudes towards Jewish people is normalized and promoted is incredibly scary. And you don't have to be Jewish to recognize that.
Completely. And as a Columbia alum who met my husband the first day of freshman year at Columbia, you know, the Harvard and Columbia that we knew 20 plus years ago is obviously so different on so many levels, not just in terms of all of this rhetoric that's just out and blatant and you can't deny, but also in terms of the numbers. I just want to point out that all of these institutions used to have quotas on Jews decades ago, back when Jews were considered too ethnic. And in the years since we left these spaces, the Jewish communities have shrunk significantly. I saw a statistic that said that the Harvard Jewish community went from 26% of the population was Jewish to 5%, or maybe 25% to 6%, something along those lines. I mean, a huge, huge shrink. Same thing at University of Pennsylvania, like two-thirds decreasing of the Jewish population in just a few years. My daughters thought that they would just continue in their parents' footsteps and obviously go to Columbia like we did. And when they visited, and you know, a year ago, a couple of years ago, the community was so small that it just didn't even feel like something that they would feel like they had enough sort of support or, you know, community to feel comfortable in. So sort of the blatant anti-Semitism aside, how big is the observant Jewish community at Harvard these days? And then how big is the active sort of larger Jewish community? Have more Jews gotten involved or connected, or do you think more are hiding post October 7th?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first of all, you're absolutely right. The community was roughly 25% Jewish. Now it's roughly 5% Jewish. It's not because Jews got dumber over time. It's because Harvard decided deliberately to not include Jews in their admissions anymore. We see that as the reality today. In terms of what the Jewish community looks like today, so there is a very vocal and proud Orthodox community, just in terms of logistics, because we believe in prayer three times a day. We're occupying the Hillel and we're at the Chabad basically on a daily basis. So we have a strong presence, and October 7th really united us. It really fortified our values, and it made us incredibly proud to stand up for those values. In terms of the Jewish community at large at Harvard, this is where it gets a little complicated and a little sad, I would add. Yes, overall, more Jews at Harvard have felt connected to their Judaism, have felt more connected to the Jewish community here, and are proud to be Jewish. We have record numbers at Harvard Hillel, at Harvard Chabad. We had Yishai Rebo come just last week, and his concert was sold out within a matter of minutes. So we had a second concert, which was also sold out in a matter of minutes. So people are very proud to be Jewish, and they're not ashamed to admit it. The caveat to this, and this is where I say it's a bit sad, there are also a significant amount of Jews. It's hard for me to quantify. I just don't know. But a significant amount of Jews who are just as vocal, just as loud, in the other direction. You know, these are Jews who their Jewish identity did not mean much to them. They were not particularly involved in any meaningful way. But post October 7th, they were the ones who started wearing prayer shawls and phylacteries during protests, saying, "Globalize the Intifada can't be anti-Semitic because, look, I'm incidentally a Jew and I'm saying it as well." So that's been really difficult to navigate. The fact that I will go to the administration or I will go to classmates and say, "Hey, this is really threatening behavior. This is really threatening violence, threatening rhetoric." And the response has been, "Well, it can't be because there are Jews who are doing it as well." So as Rabbi Hirshi Zarchi of Harvard Chabad said during the first week after October 7th, he said, "Look, we can pray for these Jews because they're part of our family, they're part of our people, but ultimately they don't want to have dialogue. They don't want to have certainly debate. They don't want to be exposed to a counter narrative." And that's been really difficult. That's been incredibly difficult because, as I said, you know, they are Jews and they are part of our people.
You know what? So was Pablo Cristiani, who debated Nachmanides. Ramban was also a Jew. And I recently learned that Turkamada was a Jew. So, and we actually had a podcast on the traitors throughout Jewish history, starting in the Torah. So it's very unfortunate. But also, Harvard should recognize that you can have people within your community with internalized hatred, and that doesn't excuse it. You mentioned prayer shawls, but I thought you were going to mention keffiyehs, because that's something that I saw in a Wall Street Journal article, that a U.S. senator came to campus and there were keffiyehs everywhere, which, although they may have started as a, you know, a religious or national symbol in the Middle East, the black and white checkered keffiyeh has really become synonymous with violence against Jews. It's what the Hamas terrorists wore. And it's really a troubling symbol now for Jews to see, because we associate it with death, destruction, torture, rape of our people. So how prominent are keffiyehs around campus?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And I completely forgot to mention it. It is, forget about it. It's prominent. It's everywhere. They actually have what's called keffiyeh Thursdays, where they encourage everyone to wear their keffiyehs and they all take a picture on the steps of the Harvard Library to, you know, post on their social media. What I find really remarkable is these are the same people who shout cultural appropriation and anything that's offensive is deemed cancelable. But all of a sudden you have these white liberals who are donning the keffiyeh and that's accepted. And you're absolutely right. If my dress of identity was synonymous with people like Yasser Arafat or Hamas terrorists, I would probably pick a different dress to wear. There's nothing inherently wrong with a keffiyeh if you're a Palestinian and that's been in your tradition for hundreds of years, but that's not what's happening at Harvard. These are, as I said, predominantly white liberals, predominantly anti-Semitic, predominantly people who espouse anti-Semitic ideas and identify with Hamas and the Houthis and Hezbollah. So yeah, when Senator Dan Sullivan of Alaska was at Harvard University and he went to the library, he was surrounded by these white liberals wearing their keffiyehs, shouting genocide, genocide, you know, you kill Gazan babies. So the level of discourse, and leaving aside the anti-Semitism for a second, but the level of discourse at Harvard is remarkably elementary. Students do not want to engage with ideas that they don't like. They shout the same talking points or they parrot the same talking points, and they don't want to be exposed, as I said, to anything that counters that narrative. So yeah, when I go outside, I will be exposed to quite quickly dozens, if not hundreds of keffiyehs. And the kippah, which to me, I've been wearing my whole life, I don't even think twice about it, it's sort of become a symbol of resistance, or it's been a symbol of bucking this trend. And so I've actually bought a larger kippah since October 7th, and I'm very proud to be wearing it.
Awesome. So I was going to ask you about that. There's a famous clip that's gone around now of a guy, I think he's in a kippah walking around Harvard, and he's being surrounded by people, I think, holding up keffiyehs, kind of screaming, shame, shame, something like that. So has your wearing a kippah put you in like a physical type of danger? Have you walked through campus and, you know, where it's not just an exchange of ideas of protesters protesting in general, but have you been targeted as a Jew because you're recognizable as a Jew?
Yeah. So the event you're referring to happened about a week after October 7th. It was at the business school. And yeah, you have a Jewish Israeli guy who is exercising his First Amendment rights. I would add that the protesters were illegally blocking all entrances and exits to the Harvard Business School. And he was surrounded by a mob of keffiyeh wearers shouting shame at him. So in terms of my personal experiences. First of all, my mom, being a very nice Jewish mom, is incredibly worried and wants me to come home and doesn't want me at Harvard. She's very concerned about my physical safety. Look, there's a current Harvard employee who challenged me to debate him on whether Jews were involved in 9/11 or not. And later that day, he posted a video on his social media waving a machete with a picture of my face. So I've had private security outside my house. I had private security outside my house for 3 days. I receive death threats, not on a daily basis, but certainly on a weekly basis. At this point, I've sort of become numb to it. So while I haven't been a victim of physical violence yet, it would not shock me in the slightest if that were to change. It would not shock me in the slightest. And number two, I am aware. I am aware that there are a lot of bad actors out there. There are people who do want to do me and other Jewish students harm. And look, I'm not going to be penalized for other people's bigotry. I'm going to continue to wear my kippah and continue to be an advocate for myself and other Jews across college campuses. But I am aware that there is a level of danger to this. I've already been minimally exposed to it. But I'm not going to change. I've done nothing wrong. I have nothing to apologize for. And I'm going to keep being me. And I would encourage Jews across the country, whether you're on a college campus or not, don't apologize for other people's bigotry, discrimination, and hatred.
Amen to that one. Okay, now let's talk about the lawsuit and the congressional hearing. So what are you suing for? How does Congress fit into that? What are you hoping the outcome will be?
Sure. So the lawsuit is actually really simple to explain. Harvard promises two things. They promise an educational experience, and they also promise to protect the students engaged in that educational experience. Now, that promise is not just Harvard acting in good faith, but it's also backed up by federal law. So Title VI of the Civil Rights Act is very clear that you can't discriminate based on a whole list of identities, including national origin, which we define as being Jewish, as our religion. It is so objectively and abundantly clear that Harvard has reneged on not that just that promise, but on that obligation under federal law. I have been targeted for my Jewish faith. There are Jews across Harvard who have been targeted for their Jewish faith. You know, you asked
me. Can I interrupt for 1 second? I want to just point out here, because this piece is important to me, and I think we have to be precise, and we're not used to talking like this necessarily, and I've corrected myself. I want to also say Jewish ethnicity, because you are a Jew by faith and also by ethnic background, and atheists who believe nothing and practice nothing are also still Jews and are also being targeted. So to just clarify, is the lawsuit also including your ethnic identity as a Jew?
Yes, yes. Okay, thank you for the correction. It's also a part of our ethnic identity as a Jew. Absolutely.
Yeah, and
sort of to that point as well, it's sort of irrelevant what your level of affiliation or denomination or political values are. The fact of the matter is Harvard has in many cases promoted and celebrated anti-Semitism on its campus, which is a direct violation of federal law. And we're calling them out on it. And I would also add that when I was in touch with the legal team that's representing me, Kasowitz, I was in touch around early November. I said for months, if Harvard were to change course, if they were to provide the same level of protection and care to Jewish students as they do with any other minority, then I would drop the lawsuit. There would be no need to have it. But time and time again, Harvard has objectively and almost proudly promoted anti-Semitism on their campus. Look, just 2 weeks ago, we had more than 120 faculty and staff promote a horrific anti-Semitic cartoon. And while it's true Harvard finally condemned it, there was no action taken. These are professors and faculty that I walk past in the hallways. Some of them have actually taken their classes. And there has been no accountability, there's been no discipline, and it's such an obvious double standard. So that's number one. Harvard is in total dereliction of their obligations under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. And then the second part, as I mentioned, is I engaged in a contract with Harvard to have an educational experience, and it's the case that I've had diminished educational opportunities. There have been days where I don't go to the library because there are mobs of anti-Semitic students who've overtaken it, shouting, "Globalize the Intifada, Palestine will be Arab, and we have Jews outnumbered." So you've made an unsafe environment for me and for other Jews. And Harvard doesn't want to be held accountable. They haven't responded to my 40 plus emails. They haven't responded to any of my requests for in-person meetings or my phone calls. So what else am I meant to do? You know, if you're screaming at the top of your lungs and no one's listening, you have to resort to radical means. And unfortunately, this lawsuit became so necessary. So we're suing them. We are going to hold them accountable. We want them to be transparent about, for example, the tens of millions of dollars that they accept from Qatar, from Jordan, from Lebanon, from Saudi Arabia every single year. Where is that money going? What are the strings attached to those donations? We want to know, how come you haven't disciplined anti-Semitic students in the same way you've disciplined students who are engaged in hatred of other forms? We want to know, why is it that they haven't forcefully protected their Jewish students? So we're suing them. We're going to keep the foot on the gas. We're not letting them go off easy. And if they want to drag this out, which clearly they want to, I'm happy to keep playing them at this game for years and years and years. I'm not letting them off the hook because it's not about me and it's not about the other five plaintiffs, but it's about Jews who for decades have been taken so much crap from all these universities, who've been taken for granted. And it's time that we stand up and we fight back. And that's what this lawsuit is.
In terms Love of- it. Okay, Congress. So yeah, is this a financial piece in terms of the lawsuit? Like, what if you could just explain, like, kind of what would the best case outcome be for the lawsuit piece? And then if you can move into the congressional side. Yeah.
Sure. So in terms of outcomes, it's sort of all of the above. Number one, compensation. I am not paying tuition dollars to support an institution that stabs its Jews in the back. Right. So we want not only reimbursements for the tuition that we paid, but we also want compensation for the emotional damage and the distress that we have been under for months now. As I said, I had private armed security outside my house for 3 days. That is not a normal action. That is not indicative of a productive, normal institution. That's a clear sign things have gotten really, really bad. So number one is, yes, financial compensation. Number two is we want to install a federal monitor on Harvard's campus to make sure that they're complying with Title VI and all the other federal obligations that they haven't been doing. And number three, we want them to enact and to enforce policies that make sure that anti-Semitic students, anti-Semitic faculty, and anti-Semitic professors have no place at Harvard University. That means fair enforcement of the school policies. Jews should not be an exception. There should not be a double standard. And that's exactly what we're experiencing today. So as I said, Harvard wants to play the long game. They don't want to work with us in any way. And so we're going to hold them accountable in a court of law.
And then where does the Congress piece? Yeah.
Yeah. So Congress is involved because, number one, they believe in this fight. Remarkably, in a bipartisan fashion, Democrat and Republicans have come together and said that what is going on college campuses is absolutely absurd, and it's most probably illegal. So Congress invited a group of 9 students, myself included, to testify in front of the House Education House Committee for Education and the Workforce. This was on Thursday. And it was 2 hours of students expressing the most heartbreaking, heart-wrenching testimony of being persecuted, not for anti-Zionism or their Israel advocacy. I mean, that certainly plays a role, but just basic objective Jew hatred. You know, there was a student who had their dorm broken into and a rock was placed in the middle saying F Jews. That's not anti-Zionism. That's not, it can be contextualized. That is objective, unvarnished, naked Jew hatred. And so Congress, number one, wants to expose these stories to the public because they want awareness to be nationalized. They want everyone, Jew or non-Jew, to be aware of just how bad it's gotten at these universities. And number two, they want to do something about it. So at the testimony, we had Congress members, again, on all sides of the aisle, come up to me very sincerely saying, okay, what can I do to help? What do you need from us? So Congress is fighting back. Congress has our backs. Congress knows that Jew hatred is out of control at these universities and they want to do something about it. So
what can they do?
So in terms of what they can do, they provide federal tax dollars to these universities, whether it's in the form of DEI, whether it's in the form of Pell Grants. And they have been very clear. If our tax dollars are being used to promote anti-Semitism, then Harvard and Penn and MIT and all these universities, you can say goodbye to every last dollar that is coming from the hardworking American taxpayer. That's number one. Hit them where it hurts. Rescind all monies that are going towards these anti-Semitic institutions. Number two, and this isn't just Congress, but this is the Department of Education. This is the Department of Justice. They know that Harvard and all these institutions need to fulfill their mandates under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. And if they don't, which they're not, then there can be consequences. There can be people who are penalized and held to account. So action is incredibly important. Rescinding tax dollars is incredibly important. Making sure that Harvard is a part of all of their federal obligations. All of these things Congress can do and they want to do, and in many cases they already have been doing. So they subpoenaed all these institutions, including Harvard, last week, and they want to make sure that there is no Jew hatred on these campuses. And this is a bipartisan effort.
I love it. Can they remove the 501c3 status? Is that something on the table?
That is absolutely something on the table. And as I said, there's a willingness from both parties to do that. So meaningful action is coming. So let this be a warning to all these universities that the age of pushing Jews aside, the age of discrimination against Jews, is over.
I love it. And what about blocking foreign aid to universities? Is that something that could be on the table?
So that's a little bit more complicated because it's not Congress's money. It's not America's money. What Congress can do is say, look, if you're getting $10 million every year from Qatar, then you don't need our money. And we're not going to give you that money. So as a private institution, Harvard does have that right to accept money from whoever they want. I mean, they can't accept it from terrorist organizations, which, as far as we know, at least today, they haven't been, although I wouldn't be surprised if, lo and behold, during the subpoena, it turns out they are. But Congress is limited in that regard. What they can do is create public pressure and for people to realize that, oh my God, these are universities that are accepting money from anti-Semitic, anti-democratic, anti-Western countries. I want nothing to do with them.
Well, you are doing amazing work. Thank God we have so much bipartisan support, even if the squad is full of vile Jew haters. Thank God there are enough people on both sides of the aisle that are supporting us. Thank God we have loud and proud voices like yours. And we're going to keep watching and praying that we start to stem the tide of this unleashed Jew hatred, because it's devastating to watch. But I think Jews coming out and being proud and speaking up for ourselves is also incredibly inspiring. And, you know, when I saw your testimony, I was like, hey, I know that guy. I'm going to have him on my show. So you should have continued hatzlacha and keep fighting the good fight for Am Yisrael.
Amen. Amen. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
And you can catch us same time, same place next week. Bye-bye.